Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, Mr. Van Vieren. Good morning, Mr. Johnston. Firstly, let me welcome the new members to the committee. Mr. Shah from the Democratic Alliance and Mr. Bengu from the African National Congress. let me say, really, we are proud as a committee to have been offered by Parliament members of your stature. We know you have performed and performed well before, and we know you love your country. We know that you love Parliament. We know that you love, in turn, you love this committee and tourism, and you are welcome. And saying so, I'm not only saying so for myself, I'm sure I'm saying so for every member of the committee. We are indeed happy and proud to have you here. And then today we shall be having a presentation by Southern Africa Tourism Services Association, that is SATSA, on tourism growth, development, and job creation. I think we are honored to have such an important role player in tourism. We are looking forward to working together in building our country, which is your country, and together moving it forward to greater heights. So it is in that spirit that we have invited you in order to make our country more competitive, because we are facing tough competition outside there. If we do not hold our hands together, we are likely to be irrelevant in the market out there, and as a result lose a lot of tourists, which is a lot of revenue. And in the poverty and inequality we experience, that is would be the worst, the most terrible scenario possible. So please do make a presentation to your parliament, our parliament, so that together we can move forward. After you have made a presentation, we shall ask questions and give views, and then check on different things. But remember, it is to make our country better, more competitive, and stronger. So over to you, Mr. Van Thielen and Mr. Johnson. We are happy to have you here.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I first of all would like to thank you for this opportunity from SATSA's side in order to provide input and in order to engage with you. I do believe it will be a very fruitful discussion. I would like to start off with an apology, if I may, for our national CEO. He has unfortunately been committed to a speaking engagement in Durban, which he was actually committed to last year. So unfortunately he could not make it. He sent the two of us instead. Just in terms of a little bit of background, I'm Martin Jans van Vuren. I'm on the National Executive Council of SATSA. I'm a national board member, and in particular my portfolio is research and statistics and development. So that's my background. And then from Howard's side, Howard is the provincial chairperson of the Western Cape chapter of SATSA. During the course of this presentation, the two of us will jump around a bit in terms of who's presenting. We've got our various strengths and weaknesses. I'm more of a statistics person. In terms of the stats, I'll try not to bore you with statistics, but just to highlight a couple of points in terms of what we've got. So what I would like to start to do is to first hand over to Howard, who's going to cover the first bit. We have, there's a printout of our presentation, and we'll refer to the printout. Unfortunately, in terms of the presentation and on the screen, that just proved a bit onerous in terms of getting the projector in sufficient time. So we'll work from the document, and we'll refer you to the printed document when we talk to that. But I'll hand it over to Howard to start us off.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for that opportunity, as Martin said. Just to cut straight to the chase, essentially we're going to follow the points that were highlighted in the document that you sent to us. And, of course, the first point we have is enterprise development and partnerships, and in terms of exactly what is happening on the ground level and what the perceptions are there in terms of how the tourism industry is perceived as a possible vehicle for creating employment and, of course, adding to the development of this country. Firstly, before we start, you have to understand that there are tourism almost, it's kind of a, it's only now recently that South Africans since last year that there's been actually a ministry for tourism has been established. You know, tourism has always been kind of attached to departments of environmental affairs or economic development or something, and now finally tourism has got its own legs, if you want to say, to stand, which is quite a good sign and quite a positive move overall. But generally speaking, overall in terms of the general populace out there, people actually find that they get a feeling that tourism, because of the numbers and because of the perceived events like the World Cup and different events happening, and the numbers being projected, and South Africa winning different awards and things like that, especially Cape Town, people find that think that tourism is actually the easiest way or the easiest kind of industry to enter in terms of starting a business. Because very often it's kind of low capital outlay, especially if you've got a vehicle, it just means you have a vehicle, you can work from home basically, and of course you get all the necessary papers, and of course, boom, there you go, you're on the way. So what actually happens, people find that they're kind of almost like sometimes disillusioned in terms of going through the processes, in terms of once they actually start the businesses, or once they start to engage, run the business itself. And the kind of things that they don't consider, for example, like, you know, the legalities involved in terms of running a tour operation, and where the opportunities are there, they don't have an understanding of the tourism channel in terms of, you know, how does the tourist actually get there, and I'll speak more about that later, which is actually really important. They don't know how to price or to manage the finances also. And, of course, there's no consideration in terms of location, in terms of where they're starting up, what they're doing, for example. Think you can just start a B&B in any area and, of course, expect people to, and then it's almost like the responsibility then falls on the associations or on the government now to sustain that business without them doing that at the local market research. So those are kind of the ground issues that we actually kind of faced with. So what we actually do to assist anybody who's interested in becoming entering the tourism industry, of course, have many various sectors, ranging from being a tour operator, B&B, an attraction, etc. So what we do, we kind of inform them, you know, through the different structures, and there are structures available, which I'll just mention in a little while, how they can be supported financially and non-financially, okay? We also inform entrepreneurs about the legalities. For example, like, you know, if you want to be a tour operator, you need to have public liability, public driving permits, you need to have all the licensing, all the requirements of the Department of Transport, etc. And of course, to try to explain the different role players in the industry, because obviously you cannot operate a business and work in isolation without having any kind of contact with the industry, and to see how all the different associations work together and what we all do to actually make and how we all contribute to the actual association, and those, of course, the government entities and the non-government entities itself, kind of thing. So the kind of the industry which is very, what is very positive in South Africa is that you find that the associations, in conjunction with local government, they actually work very closely together to assist with its enterprise development and assist with organizations entering the industry and ensuring that they actually achieve success in terms of making the organization happen. I'm just busy on the first one over here, says enterprise development and partnerships. So essentially, the kind of resources that are out there.
He's on the first page, just trying to briefly explain the different concepts.
I'm just giving a bit of background and a bit of
information.
Remarks.
Yeah.
And then he'll come into details later.
Okay,
thanks.
So I'm giving you a bit of a background in terms of the enterprise development, because obviously you need to understand the bigger picture before we kind of dive into what actually programs are out there, essentially, kind of thing. So and that is where, and now we come to the kind of resources that are available in terms of helping these communities grow, in terms of helping them kind of reach the objectives, in terms of helping them succeed in the industry. So if you have a look at the slide that you have there, we have like the red door, the TEP, which is the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, and DTI incentive and associations and access to finance. So I'll kind of cover all of those under one point, essentially. If you take, for example, the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, they have what they call Tourism Toolkits. where SMEs can go and they can actually get training in various aspects, for example, in terms of how to start your business, how to manage your business, how to use social media to grow your business, marketing, the marketing channels. And those are offered through the Tourism Enterprise Partnership. It's a national organization, of course, that has a footprint here in the Western Cape also. Then, of course, if you have take things, for example, like through the Red Door, Red Door is an initiative where they have, like, you know, the very first port of call for a small business who would like to start their business, where they actually get all the information about, you know, how do you start a business, what kind of training do you need to engage in, what kind of who do you need to go and speak to, when do you speak to tech, when do you speak to the DTI, when do you go to the different organizations. So that's the kind of the entry point in terms of getting people or companies started in the industry itself. Of course,
You know, calling the first entry the Red Door, it seems that you are saying, hey, there's a danger here.
I think maybe you should change the color to it.
A green door.
A green door, the go sign, all welcome. Yes, I agree with you. So if you take for example, then of course you have like associations, like of course then you have DTI incentives, so that's more for companies that's kind of more established in terms of, you know, growing the business, expanding the business, for example, taking the business to the next level. And they don't really deal with a micro or entry level organizations itself. And that is where the Red Door, TIP, etc., and they they start with the entry level operator or the entry-level business person who would like to engage and start in the business itself over there. Of course, a big thing in terms of, you know, it's the access to finance. I mean, very often, you know, access to finance, and of course, in terms of market research also, because very often companies or business people would like to start their business, for example, but they are restricted by, you know, in terms of being able to purchase a vehicle, because obviously, very often you cannot buy the vehicle outright in terms of cash. So if you go for financing through a bank, and of course, and that is sometimes where the stumbling blocks start to come into play, basically, in terms of getting that business person into the market and actually becoming an effective role player, essentially. And so there are different kind of organizations around to assist with funding. As I mentioned, there's the Kula, for example, the Kula Fund. And what they do, they act as a kind of a, if you don't have any collateral, for example, the Kula Fund will kind of stand as a collateral for your company, which will then allow you to be able to purchase that guest house or purchase that vehicle, for example. The other kind of organizations that there are, of course, it's through the Tourism Enterprise Partnership. They have different funding options available. There are organizations like Business Partners, for example, and there's the DTI, and of course there's the traditional banks also, which is the other way to get money. Obviously, the challenge there is to go the traditional route through the banks. It's very often the collateral is needed. There's no previous trading experience. There's no kind of previous business. And that, of course, now hinders the applicant's application for loans or for financing and things like that kind of thing. So essentially, so those are the kind of, there are many structures already available to actually assist with these organizations and actually taking them to the next level. And they have different programs, for example, where they can actually start at like, you know, level 1, and it can go up to level 2, level 3, and then, of course, you can access through the Tourism Enterprise Partnership, where you can actually then, like, you reach the next level in terms of your business, and as you grow in your business, you then qualify and can move on. Until you get to the stage where you reach the mentorship level, which we have on the list there. And the mentorship level, essentially, is if you are a small operator or a small B&B, for example, they will partner you with a more established B&B or a more established operator, and they will come in with a whole mentorship program that's done for 12 months, essentially, and then it's done through the local Department of Tourism in the Western Cape. And what they do is they then mentor that particular small business operator or B&B operator. And in terms of, you know, how to take the business to the next level, how do we actually grow your business? You know, how do we brand your business? How do you become a role player in the industry? And that is essentially what the mentorship program actually is all about. The mentor program was originally initiated by FAFSA a few years ago, and then about 2 years ago, it was incorporated into the Department of Tourism in the Western Cape, and they are now running with that program. We've just met with them recently, and we are still providing mentors to them, and they find the mentees, people, SMMEs who've reached a certain level, and they need that further support, just like kind of in terms of, you know, how do they take the business to the next level. And so we provide the mentors through FAFSA, and of course they pair them with the mentees, for example, and we monitor that process throughout the year itself. At the end, the mentors, they do get paid a small stipend for their time, etc., but it's not a lot of money. I think it works up to about $1,000 a month or something like that, essentially. And that's just to cover traveling costs, etc., etc. One thing that has hindered that whole process also is that before, we just used to provide the mentors, and we just used to like kind of do the matching pairs and things according, based according to the CV and according to the profile of the person. But now, apparently, to become a mentor, you have to, there's a tender process that you have to go through, and there's quite a lot of documentation that needs to happen before you can become a mentor. And I can safely say, in terms of from the mentor side, it's almost like they're not concerned, they're not interested in having to go through that process to tender to become a mentor. You know, so that has kind of put a hindered the process of finding more mentors, for example, or equal how to find good mentors for those SMMEs kind of thing. So those are one little stumbling blocks that's kind of has put into place, and that was introduced about 2 years ago when the department took over the whole process itself kind of thing.
Local department.
So it used to be outsourced before, as I said, SAFSA initiated it. The department provided the funds essentially, and then the program ran for about 3-4 years. It got absorbed into the department, and of course, that's when it put all like stumbling blocks in the way to kind of make the process happen. The marketing channels, just something that's very important for me to mention there in terms of development. What often happens is that people don't realize that they need to, in terms of where are the source in the business, or how does the tourism channel actually work in terms of from source, how does the client work, get from that particular point, sitting in front of their PC, making a booking online, or going to the tour operator. How does that client actually think, what are they thinking, and what process do they follow to get to the point to where they want to book? So what we find that happens very often, and I've mentioned this to the local tourism authority also, is that very often we are training new operators, and we're training new people to start guest houses, etc., but there's not actually more marketing channels being opened to sustain those businesses. So there is a pie at the moment, for example. So through all of these processes I've mentioned now, through the red door, through TIP, through the incentives, we are growing more operators. It's like, go out, start your vehicle, get your vehicle, go on the road, go and start. But they're all fishing in the same pond. So what we're actually doing is we are making the pie smaller for everybody else. And what we actually need to do is we need to create marketing channels that actually, when we are creating new businesses and say, okay, we are going to support, for example, the startup of 20 or 30 operators for the year, for example, we need to ensure that there's a marketing channel coming in to support those businesses, not from the existing pie already. Because what most operators do anyway, they get their vehicle, they're on the road, they're fully licensed, they're serviced, then what they do, they go around from hotel to hotel to hotel, please, I'm a tour operator, these are my tours. Now, there are hundreds of operators doing that, you know. So they're not going to source new business. They're kind of fishing in the same pond. And very often they become very, disheartened, because the hotels will say, but we've got our operators. We've signed deals with them already. And in terms of my business, for example, I run a language school, okay. And we've got our operators. We've been working with now for 5 or 6 years. Now, if you've got that kind of good relationship, there's no need to add. I can't add an extra tour at the weekend when I don't have the clients to warrant an extra tour, for example, or to use an extra company. So that is kind of something that needs to be taken into account, which is a big issue in terms of. So almost need to start when they set the objectives in terms of, you know, how many operators are we going to assist this year, or how many B&Bs are we going to help to grow. You know, where are they going to get the business from? I'll just give an example quickly about two or three years ago where the Department of Transport, they trained up 35, I think it was just before the World Cup, they trained up 35 bus drivers, okay? After they were fully trained, they had a whole ceremony, gave them certificates, they fully qualified, etc. They then came to SATSA and asked us, do you have any jobs for these drivers? Now, they should have actually first gone to the industry and say, do you need drivers? How many drivers do you need? And then go to do the training, and not the other way around kind of thing. You know, just assume, let us kind of do this training and we're going to develop it. If there's no jobs available for them and there's no market available for them, then everything else falls flat essentially. And then just, of course, this was set our MOU with the National Department. We signed a second MOU with in terms of our the BEE, and most of SATSA members, we are compliant, and we are pushing our members to become compliant in terms of the BEE scorecard to get it up to date. And of course, skills development levy. All our members collect skills, the skills development levy, and that gets paid over, of course, to the CT itself kind of thing. So that essentially, I think, maybe I'm talking a bit too much here, but that kind of talks the first slide, and I said as we go through points, some points will come up again as we move through. I'm going to hand you over. I think we're going to have questions and answers at the end of the session, Okay, thanks, Martin.
All right, I think when Howard speaks, there's a lot of interwoven issues in terms of the tourism industry. We've got to look at it holistically, and the one issue affects the other. So you will see we come back to a lot of the main threads running throughout the presentation in terms of key issues that are actually hampering the tourism industry. We're now turning to the second slide, the one that says initiatives to increase domestic tourism development. Now there is just a couple of main thoughts that we've highlighted. The first thing is the issue that affects people in general. And that's where we're looking at the tourism, is the cost of traveling. These days, the cost of traveling, we're not just talking about the petrol price, but e-tolling, et cetera, et cetera. The cost of traveling is starting to go up. The economic situation is, as you know, quite constraining. And the first thing where people do cut is on their travel behavior. It's discretionary spend, so rather than going on a two-week holiday, they might go away for a weekend. And that's one of the reasons that we see when we get on a little bit later, you'll see the number of trips is not necessarily that down that much. But because of the length of stay, it's so much shorter. The hotels, the B&Bs, the guest houses, they are struggling because people are not staying as long as they used to. So we've got to keep that in mind. A lot of the times what gets reported is the number of travelers, the number of trips, but it's not about how long do people actually stay in the establishments. How much do they actually use the tour operators? Do they go on the tours? Might they just go on a morning tour rather than a full day tour? All of these change in behavior has had an impact on domestic tourism in particular, because the actual cost of traveling has been going up. We were very encouraged to see in terms of the budget speech, in terms of State of the Nation address, both speaking towards increased spending on infrastructure. Infrastructure is one of those ways in order to increase access, particularly to our rural areas. And that is where people do travel to. We've got a lot of what we term VFR travel, visiting friends or relatives. People that do travel, because in South Africa we've got a history of lots of migrant labor, those people traveling back to the areas that they do come from. If it's far more easier in order to get to those areas, those trips would increase. So that is one way. If we can stimulate that infrastructure development, in particular, not just around the roads, but even rail. Rail has really been left behind in terms of a mode of transport, particularly for tourism, for people traveling. So in terms of getting the rail transport going, that is one area that really, if that could be stimulated and followed through from the State of the Nation address and the budget speech, that's definitely one of the areas where the domestic tourism can be stimulated. Then there is a huge duplication between South African tourism and a provincial marketing organization in terms of marketing domestic tourism. While even marketing international tourism, there's the provincial marketing organizations going to international shows, and there's a lot of duplication in terms of the costs. We believe that cost could be spent
far more easily in terms of a coordinated effort. We now take cognizance of the National Department of Tourism now has got specific posts in place in order to coordinate and look at how do you can all coordinate the national as well as the provincial effort. So that's really what we love to see is in terms of more cooperation between the national and provincial level, where things like, and me coming from a statistical background, a national, the domestic tourism survey that's being done at the moment, how we can expand that. The provinces are saying that the survey that's being done on a national level, they don't necessarily get all of the information that they need on a provincial level of that survey. So if they can have greater input, if they can even contribute to that survey can be expanded. We can get more market intelligence because there's a lot of statistics out there, and I want to draw the distinction. There's a lot of statistics that's being thrown out in terms of number of arrivals. But in terms of number of arrivals, the market intelligence that comes in is taking that, what is the length of stay, and then translating that into the number of bed nights. That, for me, is market intelligence. To just say we've got additional number of people arriving, that's just statistics. What the tourism enterprises on the ground needs is that market intelligence. So we need that interpretation and that greater level of detail in order for a PMB in rural Eastern Cape, for example, to be able to utilize that information as to, okay, as Howard mentioned, where does my market come from? Who do I market to? How do I get to those people? In terms of, I'm not just opening my doors, but I know who I'm targeting. I'm not just fishing in the same pond. I'm expanding in terms of getting at new markets. So that's in terms of the domestic tourism development. You will then see there's a couple of slides, which I can go through if you want to, but being the committee, I'm sure you have seen the statistics before in terms of domestic tourism. The first one that says domestic tourism in South Africa, how do we get South Africa's residents to travel? That just basically indicates the statistics in terms of there has been a decline in the number of trips. If you look at from 2007, that's around 35 million, going down to 29 million in terms of the number of domestic trips. So that has declined. As you see, the number of domestic travelers, which is that second bar, which is the 12.7 million in 2007 and the 13.5 million in 2010, that hasn't declined. So people are still traveling. They're just traveling less. And that's what we are saying, is that sometimes it's focused on the number of travelers and not the number of trips or the length of stay. So there's a little bit more behind it. And it just showed the graph, the pie chart next to it, just shows that there's a huge amount of people traveling to visit friends or relatives. And we shouldn't forget about those travelers because they might not stay in a hotel when they go to visit friends or relatives, but they do spend in the local economy. And also, in the same breath, we are seeing a change in travel behavior. When people do go visiting friends or relatives in big cities particularly, they don't always necessarily stay with those friends or relatives. They might stay in Fiesta, or they might add on another trip or another few days where they actually go on holiday, as we understand it, while combining that visiting their friends or relatives. So just so that the statistics, the next slide, which is annual trips to each province, just gives you indication in terms of where people are traveling to. KwaZulu-Natal is the main destination for domestic tourists, followed by Gauteng in the Eastern Cape, in terms of where the numbers do come from. So that's where the people do travel. This is only domestic. This is only looking at the domestic market and where people travel to. If we look at the next slide, it says day trips should not be forgotten as a source of tourism revenue. Just something that I'd like to add in terms of there are people that travel just for the day. They might not necessarily stay over, but they are traveling for the day. And because of that travel, they do spend. And somebody mentioned the interesting case study to me. If you look at Nelspruit, for example, because of the soccer that's being played there, in terms of the new stadium, there's a lot of people that's doing day trips from Johannesburg to that area. And they're not necessarily staying over, but because of that travel, they have seen an increase in the spend at the local shops and on particularly the transport side of it. So I'm just saying we always focus sometimes on the overnight trips, the day trips. People also should be kept in mind when we talk about local travel, to domestic travelers. It's people that just travel for the day. The next slide just highlights that in terms of the spend by day trippers can be higher than the spend by overnight visitors in some provinces. So some of the provinces that do not necessarily get the overnight visitors might actually get the day trippers. It's purely because of the huge number of day trip travelers that spend is actually more than an overnight spend. It's not true in the case of each and every one. KwaZulu-Natal, for example, and so on, because they get a huge portion of overnight visitors, that spend is higher. But in some of the other provinces, the Free State, the Northern Cape, provinces like that that do not get a high percentage of overnight visitors, because of the people that just travel for the day, there's an opportunity there in order to stimulate that, like they did in Mpumalanga with the use of that stadium, get people in and there's a spend there. So that's in terms of domestic tourism. All right. Then we step on to the next topic, which has been highlighted. It's the tourism sector and the contribution to development, growth, and job creation. That's the next slide. You'll see this table on that slide, and the heading is the tourism sector contribution to development, growth, and job creation. Here, unfortunately, there's a lot of figures and numbers. These figures and numbers, you can go through them at your leisure. What it basically states is in terms of what share of South Africa's economy is the tourism industry. And these numbers are from Statistics South Africa. Statistics South Africa do compile what they call a tourism satellite account. They actually go and have a look in terms of what of the national economy, what portion is actually tourism, and what the tourism industry include. And if we just look in terms of what the contribution to GDP is, their numbers for 2009, so it's about 3%. So 3% of the economy is actually the tourism industry in terms of the numbers. When we look at terms of the employment, it's about 4%. So 4% of the people employed in the economy is directly employed. Now, here we just need to make the distinction in terms of people that's directly employed and indirectly employed, because there's a number of people that depends on the tourism industry, which is not necessarily included in these numbers. If we start looking at people working at petrol stations, for example, if you're on a main tourist route and people traveling past, a more large portion of your income is actually dependent on that tourism industry, but you're not necessarily included in these numbers. So what I would like to do is just to go to the next slide, which also says tourism sector contribution to employment growth. But there is a employment in the tourism industry in the table, and then there's persons directly engaged in producing goods and services purchased by tourists. So there's things in terms of the broader calculation. If you look at the numbers on the right-hand side, that's 2.3 million people that actually are in the greater tourism industry, that's being affected by the greater tourism industry. If we purely look at the tourism industry in a very narrow classification, that's about 550,000 in terms of the numbers. So we've got to take that into consideration when we talk about the tourism industry. It has a massive impact on the rest of the economy. If we start constraining the tourism industry, other industries will suffer. So if we look at that 550,000 directly versus 2.3 million indirectly. And also just a point that I'd like to make here is that a lot of being said about the tourism industry and its ability to create employment. I think there's two things that we need to keep in mind here. Is that when tourism creates employment, the level at which it creates employment is more of your unskilled and semi-skilled labor than in any other industry. In order to your entry level into the tourism industry, it's far lower. So you can find somebody that's unskilled and semi-skilled, and you can train them up into the tourism industry fairly quickly. So tourism creates employment in that band where it's needed the most, people with semi-skilled, unskilled labor. And then the second point is that because of the flow-through effect, if we start constraining the tourism industry, we're not just constraining the tourism industry, we're constraining all of these other industries that supply to the tourism industry. Petrol stations, for example. The food industry, providing food to hotels, B&Bs, etc. bedding, linen, whatever the case may be, the building industry, building hotels, etc., it all has a flow-through effect. So those are the numbers. The next two slides is just basically looking at a comparison in terms of where South Africa, how it compares in terms of its contribution to employment, and there basically South Africa compares very well to places like Australia, New Zealand, in terms of its contribution to the economy. So similar kind of contributions. High contributions come from a country like Mauritius, but Mauritius it's not a diversified economy. So in terms of that, tourism is a big part. They basically got tourism and they've got sugar industry in terms of that. But if we look at the diversified economy, South Africa compares very well with places like Australia and New Zealand, even in the United States and so forth. So that is that's in terms of the contribution of the to the development and job creation. And I'll hand over to Howard just to talk in terms of the livelihood of small and medium micro enterprises. In terms of the next section.
Okay, thank you. For this slide, essentially, we look at the, as Mark mentioned, the SMMEs in terms of how do we sustain SMMEs, okay? And we've just put on one point there, which I'll come to now, but something that's not listed there is something called clustering. What we've done out in the industry, we've done something called clustering, where we actually get to get the idea that if you have a B&B or an accommodation establishment, okay, that is not enough to actually get the business, because a B&B, an hotel, you can sleep anywhere, any place, anywhere in the city. But if you, and especially outside of the main tourism nodes, you actually have to get them to kind of what you call cluster together. So we've been on the drive now for the past 3 years, essentially. We've been trying to get companies to work together. So, for example, you identify where your B&B is, in which area, and you look for activities or attractions close by. So, for example, now you say, so it's not just come to my B&B and come and sleep here because I've got the lovely pillows and wonderful soft duvets, and that doesn't sell. A person does not choose to go and stay at your place because they want to sleep. They're looking for what there is to do in that particular area or close to that area. So they would look, for example, if you go into, let's say, up the West Coast, there's flower season, for example, come and see the flowers and come and stay in my at my B&B with the fluffy pillows and do that, for example. Or if you're out in the minus area or something, come and see the whales, come and see, could do white shark cage diving, come in through the go across to the Overberg area, for example, and come and stay at my accommodation. So you link up with those attractions to kind of cluster together to put it to make your package, value add kind of thing. And then also we say, look at how the travelers, look at the entry points into the country, Joburg, Durban, Cape Town essentially, okay? And for the Western Cape, we say, people coming through Cape Town, now they could be traveled down the Garden Route, for example. Look at your competitors and your the attractions in the cities before you and the cities after you, and promote them. To say, like, you know, you've now seen the whales, for example, and you've stayed at those wonderful guest houses there. Come now to my area to come and see this cave and this thing, or come do this call. And then after this, you can move on your way to the next place to go to Neisner, for example, to go and do this and to do that. So that is what we've kind of been embarking on in terms of getting people to actually look at the bigger picture. And I must say, that's what I mentioned earlier, in terms of tourism industry with the departments, with the different associations working very closely together, and also what we do is with the local government department also a very good working relationship in time to have this happen. The other thing I must mention, just before I get to the government department, is this called clustering. There's something called JAMS, which is JAMMS. I don't know if you've ever heard of JAMS. It's the Joint Association Members Meetings, okay? And this happens 3 times a year. And it started about a year or two before the World Cup, where we decided that, and basically the Joint Association Members Meeting is made up of SAPSA, FedHauser, SAKI, and Cape Town Tourism. So the reason for the jams, what we did there was, you know, before the World Cup. So WhatsApp would have a meeting, we invite a speaker now to come talk about the World Cup, for example. Then FedHealth would have a meeting about the World Cup, they invite the same speaker. Now sometimes you find a company that would be overlapped, that have membership of FedHealth and SAPSA and Saki, for example. So that member now coming to the meeting and listening to the same speaker at three different meetings. So we decided now, why don't we have a joint meeting and we bring the speakers or the topics that are relevant for that particular year, bring it under the spotlight, and we have the speakers covering those topics there. So we go back to our own meetings, our own chapters, for example, we don't cover the same topics. So that adds value to the SME also. So we have big meetings made up of about, on average, about 180 to 200 people come, and there we have an information sharing session. The theme, for example, for last year was how to grow and sustain your business. This year it is still continue along those threads of it, but we're saying how to go and study business responsibly also, adding the responsible tourism aspect to it. And we actually have, so it's not just presentations, we have live interactive sessions where they're actually having a platform where they can actually network, so you can come to the meeting with your business cards, with your brochures, and we allow time within the meeting to actually do networking, like speed dating, for example, and we have sessions, breakaway groups where they can actually meet people, so it's really interactive, and you can actually meet and network with people right there. And the last thing on that point there is just that the government's buying behavior, buy local, buy SME. Government workers travel a lot around the country, you know, through various, but yet we find that the trend there is that the use of SMMEs in certain areas, for example, is not as predominant as what it could possibly be. Because you find that, I mean, you find that when they travel to a meeting, they would stay in five-star hotels, for example, get Avis car hire, or get the biggest shuttle company in the thing to drive you around, and et cetera. But for the same cost that it stays to stay at one night at a five-star hotel, you can stay at a local guest house, for example, and get a chauffeur-driven shuttle company to take you to your meetings and back. So for the same cost of one night in a five-star hotel, for example, they can do that at the SME. Okay? I'm not saying you must now all go and stay and just move into, stay with SMEs and stay with small B&Bs, but where the opportunity lends itself, you know, to make a hard and fast decision to say, this year I'm going to be attending 20 meetings in 20 different places kind of thing, and out of 20 meetings, for five of those, I'm going to choose an SMME. So if every government traveler who does that, immediately you add into the sustainability of those SMEs. And also you can save some money because it's much cheaper there. And of course you're still contributing, supporting the big players, and supporting now the smaller players also. Okay, that's my 2 minutes on the soapbox.
All right, moving on. The next slide that we've got, it says issues to address, and then underneath that it talks about the shift in geographic markets and geographic spread. Now, in terms of geographic markets, that's into geographic spread can be read on different kinds of levels. When we talk about where do our tourists come from, as well as where do they go, in terms of geographic markets and geographic spread. The truth of the matter is that when we look at tourists in South Africa, we still, the traditional markets dominate. It's the USA, the UK, and Germany. Those are still our main markets in terms of the people that do come to South Africa from overseas. There are new markets, India and China, but they are, in terms of the actual numbers, are not competing with those main markets as of yet. So we've got to keep that in mind, that they are growing. Make no mistake about it. They are growing, and there's huge potential issue, potential markets to be gained from this. But we've got to be careful in terms of that we do not constrain that market through things like, for example, visa issues. For somebody from India and China to come to South Africa, obtaining a visa is quite a laborious process. It comes through in terms of really, at the end of the day, some people just say it's not worth the effort. And particularly when you've large tour operators
are starting to say, well, it's not worth the effort. South Africa is going to lose out on a large number of volumes of people actually coming. If we look at India, India is expanding rapidly, and there in particular is its huge potential. China as well. What SATSA has done, in terms of DERCA, I assume you're familiar with DERCA in terms of the diplomatic corps, SATSA is involved with the National Department of Tourism and South African Tourism to train these officers in terms of how do we deal with somebody that comes and have a tourism inquiry. Who do we refer them to? How do we deal with it? Who can we refer them to? Providing them with the information, because what we found is that South African Tourism do not have offices throughout the world in each country that South Africa is represented. And it comes down to the diplomatic staff within that country in order to field and deal with tourism questions. So if somebody walks in the door and say, I want to go to South Africa, what do I do? That officer needs to be in some kind of position, if either to assist them fully or to at least point them in the right direction in order to get the relevant information. So that is one of the things that SATSA is doing in particular, getting involved in that training, providing various information and documentation in order to assist these officers. So when we look at the markets, if you look at the next slide, it says source of overseas tourists to South Africa in 2010. That shows you in terms of, it's 2010 figures, the 2011 figures, and so on, I can also provide you with, but I just wanted to highlight, and you'll see the ones that I've circled is the so-called BRIC countries. And just to compare them, if we look at the UK, we're looking at 450,000 visitors. If we look at India, that's 71,000. It just puts it in perspective in terms of the number of people that we're getting from those countries. So what we're saying is that in terms of the traditional markets, we need to ensure that we keep on getting those traditional markets, while at the same time growing the India and the China and so forth. Russia and Brazil, 53,000 in 2010, but that was a little bit boosted by the Soccer World Cup. So we had quite an extraordinary amount of Brazilians visiting us in terms of that. 14,000 of them actually just arrived in June of 2010. So those are the kind of numbers, and it just puts it into perspective. If you look at the next slide, which says the majority of foreign tourists passes through Gauteng because of O.R. Tambo International Airport, and they need to cross border shopping and so forth. If we look at the numbers in terms of where foreign tourists, these are foreign tourists, where they enter South Africa, O.R. Tambo is still the main entry point for the tourists that fly in, but also that we see the land arrivals. They travel to Johannesburg because the land arrivals, people that cross South Africa's borders, a large portion of them are here in order to do shopping and to trade. They come to shop in South Africa and then take goods back to the neighboring countries. So those are the numbers that we're looking for. Again, that's just the arrivals. The next slide says Gauteng's share of foreign bed nights are much less given the longer length of stay of foreign tourists in other provinces. So if you look at that next slide, which talks about the share of bed nights, the provincial distribution, the share of bed nights, there you'll see the Western Cape, for example. If you start looking at bed nights, because people stay for longer in the Western Cape, they've got a larger share of the bed nights than they actually got of the number of arrivals. So that slide that says Gauteng's share of foreign bed nights are much less given the longer length of stay of foreign tourists in other provinces. It brings in, again, if I hop back on that, in terms of the length of stay, where do people stay and how that affects in terms of the geographical spread. One of the issues in terms of the geographical spread, there are basically three provinces that get the majority of tourism, whether you're talking domestic tourism or foreign tourism. And that is your Gauteng, your KwaZulu-Natal, and your Western Cape. The rest of the provinces are losing out. Mpumalanga are struggling. They used to be one of the top provinces in terms of tourism. The reason for that is that in terms of the foreign tourists, what we have seen, and it's a worrying trend, one of the issues is that that airports company has put up the landing costs and so on.
as I understand it, and I speak under correction now, you know, it costs just to land one of the big Airbuses or Boeings costs you 80,000 rand just to land it. Whether it's full or empty, it doesn't matter. That's what it costs you in order to land it. Now, what has happened is that we've seen, for example, there's an airline from Portugal that's flying to Angola, and from Angola it's flying to Maputo. And it's taking tourists from Maputo, driving through the border post, visiting the Kruger National Park, driving out through the border post, and then flying out from Maputo. So those tourists are not flying into OR Tambo anymore, driving through to Kruger. We are losing out on those tourists because it's too expensive in order to land that plane at the airport. So that is, for us, a serious trend that's starting to develop. And all of the airports in our neighboring countries are starting to develop. Maputo, even if you start looking at Gaborone, and you look at that Harare, these airports are starting to develop, and we're starting to see that airlines like Emirates, for example, are starting to fly direct from Dubai into these countries. And South Africa is going to lose out because South Africa used to be the gateway. OR Tambo used to be the first port of call. People used to fly into OR Tambo and then from there fly out to our neighboring countries. They used to visit the region, so they used to visit Victoria Falls, they used to visit Windhoek, they used to visit the Maputo, for example. But they used to fly to South Africa first. That is starting to change. And one reason for that change is that in terms of actually landing a plane is starting to become too expensive for them. So in terms of flying distance, for them it's the same flying distance. It doesn't make a difference whether they land in Maputo versus OR Tambo. The distance is not a problem. It's actually a question of how much does it cost us to land. So that is having a serious impact on the numbers. Next slide that we've got is says issues to address, and it says tourism statistics. I don't know how familiar you are. The first question is, how many tourists do we actually receive per annum? If you look at the next slide, the slide says international tourism to South Africa in 2000. And it's this slide right at the bottom. What you will see on that slide is the top line that you see is the numbers that we used to get from Statistics South Africa, and it was visitor arrivals. That's why we've got numbers from 2000 up to recently, because that's how the numbers were broken down. In 2009, Statistics South Africa decided in order to break down those numbers more fully and take out the same-day visitors. And the same-day visitors were taken out, so we will then take it down from visitor arrivals of 11 million to foreign tourists, people that actually stay overnight. And that's actually 8 million. Now, if we take from that 8 million, there are a large portion of people that actually travel across our borders in order to come and do shopping. Now, do not understand me incorrectly. Those people are very important to South Africa's economy. They're very important to the tourism industry as well, because they do come, they travel, they stay in accommodation establishments, but their main purpose of visit is only to come and shop and take things back to their neighboring countries. If you're looking at building a hotel in Cape Town, for example, that is not your market. Those are people crossing the border. The people that you're looking at is mostly overseas tourists. Now, in terms of overseas tourists, that's actually just 2.2 million in 2010. So we just want to put it in perspective when we look at tourist statistics, is in terms of the actual number of people that stays in accommodation establishments and the potential market. How it mentioned in terms of people entering into the tourism industry. Too many of them look at the 11 million and say, that is my potential market. That is not the potential markets of tourists coming to stay in an establishment. You need to look in terms of where exactly you are located. If you're going to be located in Nelspruit, for example, there you've got a bigger proportion of what you're going to get. If you're going to be in a rural Eastern Cape, for example, those are not, the markets that you are looking at. So in terms of tourism statistics, we just need to look at a realistic number of the actual number of tourists that we're talking about. Question that has been raised is an oversupply of hotels. Is there an oversupply of hotels and why? Yeah, at the moment, if we look at the large metros. If you look at Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban to a certain extent, there is a current oversupply of hotels. The reason for that, if you look at when these hotels were being planned, if you look at the times in order to build a hotel, in order to build a hotel, it's going to take at least 2 years. In order to, from the time you first start digging to opening your doors, because you've got time in order to actually build a building, you've got to train staff, you've got to stock the hotel, you've got to put in all the various furniture, fittings and equipment, so it takes about 2 years. Before that 2 years, you've got at least another year to 2 years of planning in order to plan that hotel. You need feasibility studies. Feasibility studies you need in order to get financing. Once you've got your financing, you need to get your various zoning, your various approvals, if you need to do environmental impact assessment, all of those are planning exercises. So that can take at least 2 years. So you're looking at least a 4 year, 3 to 4 year time frame before you're actually opening, from the moment you decide you want to build a hotel to the hotel actually opening. Up to 3 or 4 years, absolutely. And what has happened with these hotels that opened during the World Cup, or just before the World Cup, they were all planned well before the economic situation turned very negative. So those hotels were planned in 2006, 2007. That's when the wheels were set in motion in order to get the hotels developed. And it's also, a lot of people say some of the hotels were built just for the World Cup. I can assure you, we do feasibility studies in our company. Those hotels were not built just for the World Cup. They were built, many of them were trying to get into the market before the World Cup, true enough. But they were looking at the long-term period. You cannot just build a hotel for that period. So they were looking at the long-term future of South Africa and the marketing exposure that South Africa would receive through the World Cup. And that would hopefully boost the tourist numbers. So that's the reason why we're sitting at the moment, is that there was additional hotels that came on board, and then unfortunately the economic situation turned negative in our source countries. The US, the UK, Germany, Netherlands, all of those countries that are mentioned, those are struggling. So they're traveling less, so less people are coming. More hotels, less people. Struggling, so it leads to a struggle in the industry. So, from my side, that's just in terms of the tourism statistics. And in terms of that, I hand back to Howard now to look in terms of successes and challenges.
Thank you, Martin. Mr. Chair, I'm just checking this with the time. Do you want to take the break now, or shall I continue?
How long are you going to stay with me?
I've got about another 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
I'm going to go to the hospital. Okay. Hello, baby. I'm okay. How are you?
What are the seven wonders of the world? Do you remember your
kids?
Do you know the seven wonders of the world?
The seven wonders. This mountain is one of them. Who is that? Can you please have a voice and ask Dorothy's number? I don't have a number. Is Nasarapon one of them?
I'm trying to think of my school days.
Okay, 073 is one.
I'm trying to think of my school days.
Oh, I don't know. I'm also confused now that you're asking the question.
No, we just had a survey recently to see whether we should be called the table now to the what they call it. That is the wrong word for it.
073 761 8 2 0. Just can't remember them anymore. Okay.
You see, that's one of the problems I think with our neighboring countries, because if people want to come from overseas to Africa, they want to go to Victoria, okay? Then they want to go to Kruger National Park, they want to come to Cape Town, Durban, they
go home.
They get a package, maybe go to Now, if you go to Zimbabwe, sometimes they're worried about the situation.
Oh, there's a lot of ruins. I think Zimbabwe ruins. I want to
go to Zimbabwe ruins. I went to Victoria Falls, my daughter was in Canada. I don't know if you're married to
Zimbabwe, you know, of course, sometimes the transport infrastructure is just a little awkward.
I've traveled quite up to Zimbabwe, because that's where my daughter was born.
If I can't book a ticket before 2, I'm trying to find a house, that's why I'm going to go to Zimbabwe.
We cannot look at this aspect and that aspect, because what happens in one kind of, it's kind of called the ripple effect through all the others. And those kind of some of the successes which we kind of identified, of course there are many others, but I just thought of bringing this to the attention to for the meeting. And of course the World Cup, we all know things have been over-reported, it's overly done in terms of, you know, what has happened on there. But I think one of the biggest, I would say the biggest things that could have been done after the World Cup in terms of the amount of publicity we received around the world from the attention in terms of the World Cup, I don't think any country has that kind of marketing budget to promote as a country. And, you know, the thing that we needed to do to build up to the World Cup was to ensure that what happens post-World Cup, I know there have been initiatives, there's been things in terms of that, but, you know, one of the things that we had at SATSA, before the World Cup, for example, we had meetings with hotels, we had meetings with airlines, we had meetings with, we said, people, please watch your pricing. Don't price us out of the market. We begged and we pleaded 3 years after the World Cup, please watch your prices. And I promise you, it's us as regards the hotels, it's us as the operators is doing, it's the operators, but it's hotels. And it was just a big mess where the prices just shot through. I think the local flight from Johannesburg was 5,000 rand one way, for example. It was ridiculous in terms of prices. So we were perceived as a very expensive destination, where one of our major selling points before the World Cup was that we are very attractive because we are very competitive in terms of prices. So although it was a success, I think a lot more could have been done with that in terms of private sector itself, and of course in terms of government afterwards, in terms of, you know, how do we continue the legacy, what do we do afterwards in terms of riding that wave of success. And you'll see airport developments, you have some things where I have successes on top and I haven't done as challenges also. One thing is airport developments, okay? Now, Cape Town Airport, R. Tambo, for example, the new King Shaka Airport in Durban, huge developments. These are world-class international airports. They're great, they're fabulous, and it adds the efficiency of processing people. Don't make it sound like a sausage factory, but to process people from landing right through the process to get into their vehicles to depart and vice versa. It's efficient, it's quick, it's organized. The airports are amazing, so that has really been a huge success in terms of South Africa kind of thing. And I've put that down there under the issues, the challenges also, for example. But I'm not going to mention that because Martin highlighted that already. We are losing out. Because of our taxes, we are losing out because of the cost it now takes to land an aeroplane here and for visitors to travel through South Africa, you know, just even for local domestic visitors. Public transport, big cluster, you know, things like MyCity Bus is now running, Gautrain is working, for example. There are kind of strides being made in that, okay? But I've got it under challenges also because obviously it still needs a lot more. A lot more needs to be done in terms of to make us, because one of the biggest problems is not everybody can hire a car when they get to South Africa, but yet they would like to go to different places. They ask, how can we boost tourism in the outlying areas outside of the CBD, for example? Well, you can't boost tourism in those areas if there's no access to these areas, where the only access that you have to get there is through a tour company or if you have to hire a car and drive yourself there. But safe, reliable, efficient transport, that's the only way you can boost tourism to the outside the CBD and to the outside the main nodes, for example, in terms of that over there. Seven Wonders of the World, I think, do you all hear that? We are Table Mountain, one of the Seven Wonders of the World. Hopefully for the next 2,000 years, Table Mountain will appear in textbooks around the world, and that when kids grow up around the world, they'll say, I'm going to see Table Mountain kind of thing. So that leaves, a lot to be said in terms of, but look, anyway, it's one of the wonders, so why not? There's definitely been an increase in visitors over the past years. I mean, the only of the airports companies are reporting that there's been an increase in visitors. As Martin showed also in the statistics, there has been an upward trend. Responsible tourism in the Western Cape, we signed the Responsible Tourism Charter. That was 2010. That was with Alderman Dan Plato, the then mayor of Cape Town. We signed a tourism charter with the different associations and with the mayor in terms of the city and association pledging our services or pledging that our companies are becoming more responsible in terms of working in tourism. The convention center, big plus also, obviously, as you know, it's doubling up in size now. And the convention center has opened, it's been really busy, and it's a huge success. I'm just talking in terms of the Western Cape side. Of course, the same thing happened to the ICC in Durban, whereby these have large attractions in terms of numbers to the city. With the conferences, for example, there was the one conference that happened at the same time Parliament opened. You couldn't find a hotel room in Cape Town on the 8th and the 9th of February, for example. Sorry? The mining conference, that's right. So these are all huge, you know, it's huge people coming in and spending money. But, you know, how do we get that money? And that comes back to the point I made earlier in terms of the SMEs. How do we actually spread the money outside of the big players? How do we get the money out? So we need public transport to be able to get there, for example. More promotion and understanding. Where are these miners, I mean, people for the mining sector in Java coming from? Where are the people for the world design thing coming from? Where do they come from? How do they book here? How can we get them to stay in our establishments outside of the CBD, for example? So those are kind of things that need to be kind of, you know, looked at and challenged. And not only in Cape Town, basically around the country also. But the same problem exists in Gauteng, the same problem exists in KZN, and of course in the Eastern Cape and other provinces. And of course, the other thing is the design capital. We want that also, for example, so we still need to kind of get on our surfboards and dive that wave still in terms of making that, to realize numbers from becoming the design capital of the world, for example, kind of thing.
Just a second, a bit on the design capital concept.
Last year, Cape Town, we won we became the design capital of the world. We won the right to hold the design conference in 2014. Yeah. So we won that because this kind of happens around the world. It moves from country to country, and we've won the next one to be hosted here in Cape Town, kind of thing. So
it's based on buildings, architecture.
Yeah, it's based on architecture, but not only architecture. There's quite a number of design elements that goes into it. So it might be anything from fashion through to any kind of products, furniture, actual architecture, anything that has to do with design. And what it does is that it focuses the world attention on South Africa. And there is an event in terms of a conference, but there's various side events that is being built around it. It's basically going to be a year within which the world is going to look to come to South Africa for various types of events during that period. And I think just to tie in with that, the design capital of the world, things like that is really one of the ways that South Africa can highlight and extinguish itself in the world stage. So that Johannesburg, for example, why doesn't that become a shopping capital or a business capital or whatever the case may be? Durban become a beach capital or whatever the case may be? I'm just throwing things out there. The point is that there are ways and means in order for South Africa and South African cities and South African regions
right.
to elevate itself in the world stage. And it's really, it's on a world world international level, and through that there are various events. And through the events, you bring people to South Africa, having them come and experience the destination, and they then come and return with their families and on holiday.
So so those are the kind of successes we are celebrating. Of course, there are others also, quite a few around the country, but those are the main ones that all kind of, and these things all contribute to the growth of tourism, essentially, in South Africa. Obviously, it doesn't come without its challenges, and these are some of the things we've highlighted here. Of course, there are many others, but the main ones, as you see on top of the bill we put over there, is the liquor bill. I don't know if you heard about the proposed liquor bill that was going down in the Western Cape, where the trading hours was going to stop at 11 o'clock, for example, residential, and you can't, et cetera, et cetera. We find that these kind of, you know, proposals and these kind of proposals of the law, for example, it actually almost takes us back in time in terms of what it is we are trying to achieve. Because when you start to introduce these kind of laws and you kind of restrict people in terms of, you know, their choices and in terms of what they have to do, then you almost kind of, we are almost prescribing to people in terms of how they should live their lives to a certain degree, okay? And I think in terms of this over here, the influence that has on the tourism industry, it really goes beyond, I don't say the impact. For example, champagne breakfasts, for example. You know, people want to enjoy, like, on a honeymoon, for example, one thing is, like, have a champagne breakfast. Going out, coming back from a day out at the safari, for example, or going for a day through the whole night, coming back, having dinner, and now going sitting at the bar to have a drink, for example, a glass of wine or something. Now suddenly you can't do that. So the impacts are kind of, those are kind of far-reaching. There's a whole discussion around that, and I think I'm not going to labor that point, but those are the kind of things we have to think about. What is the impact of changes actually have on the business side of things in terms of tourism? Just give an idea, also Sandparks, they introduced now, we've been busy with them here in the Western Cape, now suddenly they've introduced a permit system where each tourist company must have a permit to enter the park, which costs 150 rand. But it's not the 150 rand. Now they've got to produce the tax clearance certificate, they've got to produce the figures, the impact on the park, the this, the that. You know, and for a company, sometimes it's been over-regulated because most of the companies belong to one of their associations, and this information has already been required by the association. They want bank statements, it's just a whole list of completely ridiculous kind of aspects. And then, of course, we ask now, who do you actually permit? Is it the operator, the company? Is it the driver? Is it the tour guide? Is it who is actually being permitted to go to use the company? I mean, into the parks. So there's quite a few things weren't kind of considered essentially, and that's been put on hold now at the moment. But these are impacts that it actually has on the industry itself in terms of putting more stumbling blocks in the way when you're trying to do business essentially. Department of Transport. And I think Martin has a few things we'd like to probably add in here also. But essentially, I mean, it's been a 7-year process to try to get through the Department of Transport to understand that there is a difference between a minibus taxi doing public transport and a tour operator carrying tourists. it was a process of note to know. The process to apply for the permit, everything was done the same in terms of, and it's only recently we've actually taken note of, actually maybe your tour operator and your company, your road usage is different to that of a minibus, a taxi, for example. So these are the ongoing things and legislation put into place, and so there's a stage also where the permits, you cannot operate the vehicle without a public a road permit. It took up to 6 months for this permit to be issued. So now if you're trying to do business and you're trying to go ahead and you're entering the business, for example, from an SME point of view, these stumbling blocks have been put into place in terms of how to get this done. It has improved a lot now over the past, I'd say the past year and a half now, but these are the kind of challenges that we are constantly facing and facing all the time. And, you know, if you take that, for example, I was going to kind of mention, where somebody mentioned also that you cannot, you know, the government departments, the impact it has, it's across all the departments. So, you know, the Department of Transport, for example, the Department of Tourism, the Department of, you know, all these departments, they need to kind of coexist. They cannot act in silos because they need to understand what the impact of their actions actually have on another industry like the tourism industry itself. So there needs to be more consultation, more kind of dialogue that needs to happen between the departments. And basically the tourism department, the Department of Tourism, needs to have more dialogue with the other departments and establish better relationships, because there's definitely this kind of silo approach sometimes that you find happening within the government departments. Airport taxes and access, Martin mentioned that already, so I won't belabor that point. Obviously, the big issue is crime, the perceptions of crime and the crime. A lot has been done in terms of to bring the numbers in terms of incidents down, but a lot more still has to be done. And a simple question that I can simply ask you to get you to understand in terms of like the perceptions that people have of the country. Like when you ask somebody, for example, what's the first thing that comes to mind if I mention to you Rio de Janeiro? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? What would you say? Anything? No? Yeah. Carnival, beach, you know, Copacabana. I mean, those are the first images. But Rio, it's actually more dangerous in terms of crime statistics than Cape Town. You know? But yet, the perception, and in terms of what it is that we are putting out there, as we mentioned, Cape Town or South Africa to international visitors, the first thing that comes to mind is crime. And I know this because when I... Sorry?
Just mentioned TSI.
Yeah, TSI. So the thing is, so I know this because I travel abroad to different... Because I've got to go and promote my business. And before I can promote my business, I first have to promote South Africa, come to South Africa. I then have to promote the city we are in. I say, then you can come to my city and this is what you can do there. And then at the end of all of that, I can then say, you know, come to my center. This is where you can learn English. Okay? So that's the process everybody has to follow. South Africa first, the region, and then your business itself. Okay? I'll come up with that in the next session. Then, of course, but the other good thing we have, which is another SACSA initiative, it's called the TSI, the Tourism Safety Initiative. We can send you the information about that. Essentially, what we've done there is we've taken the call center, where you can email, you can fax, and you can call. And what they've done is they've found that the supermarket, the shopping center malls, they had a kind of a security infrastructure. The banks had a security infrastructure. The exit all have different security, they kind of work together to reduce crime and those particular things. So these are all the silos that were there. So what the Tourism Safety Initiative has taken the information that comes from the shopping mall crime to banking crime to this crime, and they kind of put it all together into a kind of a database to see the trends that happens throughout across. And what has happened is they've actually, remember there's the whole thing about the cash in transit heist, for example? That has come to an abrupt end because they were able to actually predict when the next one was going to happen based on the information that was shared across this platform. Because they found that the same kind of people, they have like guns and things that you can vent that goes across from this group to that group to this group to do the different things. Same people were targeting the same different areas and things. So this information that has helped a lot in averting a lot of problems, not only in the Western Cape, in Gauteng also, and in KZN and the other provinces. where everything gets fed into the system, and they look for similarities in the kind of thought work, identify where the hotspots are. They offer tourism trauma counselling for the visitors involved in any incidents and things like that also. I can definitely send you more information about that too. Robben Island, Robben Island has one of the icons of South Africa in terms of the biggest attractions to South Africa. At the moment, it's riddled with problems in terms from a managerial level right down. Accessibility to the island, just the problems with the visa, with ticketing, with the boats, etc., etc. I think you've heard about it, you've read about it kind of thing. And the problem there is a lot of tourism, Czech tourism brochures now that they print, you don't find Robben Island being listed on the brochures anymore. Because they cannot trust to have that product on their brochures when they know that they cannot be guaranteed that the visitors will actually get there. Because it's too much time and too much effort and too much compensation has to happen for a group, a bus standing there to go to Robben Island. Sorry, the ferry is broken. This is not happening. There's a strike. This is. And I promise you, check it out. And another way that's going very shortly that way also, it's going to be with sand parks, with Cape Points, that everybody, because remember on the private operators business, we print up brochures. And remember, it's like the clustering. Come to Cape Point, come and see Robben Island, come and see this over there. And very shortly, you will soon see that Cape Point will slowly but surely start to disappear people's brochures also. Simply because of the issues involved with sandparks and the kind of problems we've been encountering with the organization over the past few years kind of thing. So moving on. Exchange rates, a big problem that you have to watch out for, because obviously that's the currency fluctuations, that's a big challenge. I mean, because people quote in dollars and euros, and of course they can't change their prices now. You can't suddenly charge 110 euros one day and the next day it's 98 euros and the next day. You know, you have to be consistent in the market abroad. Bank fees in South Africa, a huge problem. It's expensive to bank in South Africa. It's a problem to get money from the banks. And I think the banking system just overall, it's kind of, it's a very exclusive club that kind of excludes a lot of opportunities. And I think the kind of fees that we're charging is just it's too high. Public transport I mentioned already. Responsible tourism, on that side of us there, we have responsible tourism, which was a success. On the challenges we have over here, is that also, remember, there's still a lot of work needs to be done with responsible tourism to ensure that companies are going green. And companies, and to see now, how do we actually get that message from the charter, how do we move to implementation phase? And that's the phase we are busy with now. We've done the high-level stuff already. It's implementation now, and that's the challenge that's actually been faced at the moment. Skills development. Huge issue in terms of service delivery, in terms of, you know, what skills are being developed, how are we addressing this over there. And, of course, the last but not least, which Martin mentioned earlier on also, is the visa story. It's how do you actually, how do people access visas? Like, for example, one of the biggest, the highest spend per capita for visitors to South Africa is from Angola. They spend the most money in South Africa, period, out of all visitors. But yet, they struggle the most to get the visa to come to South Africa. And this was even after our president went there and he came here and there was this whole big high-level exchange between the countries and stuff like that. The problems to get visas to come from Angola here, it's still an issue. And vice versa, for South Africans to get visas to go to Angola, it's still an issue. This is a huge market for South Africa. It's a huge market in terms of visitors. It's a huge market in terms of spend. And we're not doing enough to take care of these markets in terms of how do we actually access and how do we get these people from these countries into South Africa, kind of thing. I'm finished, yeah? Okay, so just on the last thing over there, I just want to give you just one thing over there, just basically edutourism. Has anybody heard of edutourism? Do you know what edutourism is? Edutourism is basically whereby not only students, adults, young adults from age 18 up to age 55 plus, they come from different parts of the world to study English in South Africa. Okay? It's a new industry. New South Africa has been going only for about 13 years. Around the world, it's been going for over 40 or 50 years itself. They act as inbound tour operators. I've put it down because I've got the language center. So
So what I do is I have agents in different parts of the world. They send us adults, some different to study English. Then we provide them with accommodation. We provide them with tours. We provide them with all of those kind of sectors, all the extras they can do outside of the English lessons itself. So when I go to sell my business, I first go to consult. Don't go to USA or to England or to Australia. I said, come to South Africa. You can see it's a new democracy. You can see the Big Five. You can see Robben Island. You can go to the Winelands. You can do these things. These are all the activities you can do outside of your English lessons. We've got the accommodation. We've got hotels. We've got backpackers. These are all things you can do. The exchange rate is great, etc., etc. Because you can study English in any country. You can go to USA. You can go to England. But why come here? Why come to my center? So I've got to sell the destination first, and that is why I'm involved in the tourism industry. Yes, sectors and niche markets like this, the problem is it's not recognized enough by government institutions. One of the biggest problems, just to give you one of the problems we have with it, successes is we've got over 40 language centers around the country now doing this already. We haven't even touched the tip of the iceberg. Malta, a country that has a population of 55,000 people. In 2009, they received 58,000 language learners to go study English there. We are hovering around the 10,000 mark only now, and the country is bigger than Africa. There's a long way we still need to go. And just one last thing I want to say on that point there, where I talk about government departments, is if you look at the Department of Education, for example, not recognizing edutourism, we cannot now get, when Martin mentioned visas from China, language centers cannot get Chinese students in here simply because the Department of Education does not recognize language centers. There is no place in the Department of Education in terms of recognizing language centers. So now, Spain, they send up to 8,000 people abroad every year. Sponsored, fully sponsored. Airfare, accommodation, and studying. We can't access them because the Spanish government, our government does not recognize us as language centers, so the Spanish government will not work with us because our government does not recognize us. Russia has the same kind of thing, China has the same kind of thing, and we cannot access these markets. Anyway, so that is the kind of thing, just the understanding to understand the tourism, all the different niche markets that exist within this kind of player, and know that there are other ways and other sectors, so new things to grow the cake for the SMEs, for example. And I think that's my final say. I think we've got time. Thank you very much. That's it.
Thank you very much, Johnson. You did not mention any development in wedding tourism.
Wedding tourism, yes, definitely.
Where people have honeymoons on top of the Table Mountain. And Robben Island
and medical tourism
as issues develop. But thank you very much for an exciting presentation. So I'll just invite a few questions up to about 12:15, and then so that we can then see how we manage the rest of the agenda. The president, Mr. Khwarai. So kick off Mr. Shah, then.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank both the gentlemen, Mr. Van Buren, as well as Hal Johnson. Well, look, I'm new to the portfolio. However, I have a few observations to make and perhaps something for our chairperson to perhaps, take relevant action and recommendations from the rest of the committee and communicate the same to the relevant departments. Well, the statistics that you provide doesn't give you the full story. Some of these statistics seem to be very old, like in the case of job creation and employment one and the issue of the GDP contribution. You can see that the statistics of the GDP one is going back to 2009, and we can't really, it doesn't tell us why it was at, let's say, 2005, at a certain level and why it took a dip in the middle and came back to stabilize, like 2.9%, 2005, 3%, and then goes back to 2009, and the job sector 4.0, and then so why these trends? What contributed to all these trends? So the statistics are actually not current. And the other issue that the point that you made is quite true. The statistics, don't tell the whole picture in terms of, you know, arrivals. Not everyone that comes into the country is necessarily here as a tourist. Though those are economic migrants. Those people that come across do go back. They have some business to be made there, but they're not tourists. So we really need those statistics, because if you don't have correct statistics, then you can't plan accordingly. Doesn't help. Then you have a lot of refugees, people, illegal immigrants come here. So they are shown on paper as arrivals, but actually, what is their contribution? Some of them are actually becoming a burden on our infrastructure and our social services, etc. So we need to separate them. And that's not your fault. I'm just making these observations, right? The other thing that I find very worrying is that domestic tourism is key. We can't rely entirely on foreigners to come to our country. If our own people don't travel, and they themselves don't have confidence in their own infrastructure, and they don't want to see their own country, why should somebody from outside come here? So I think government needs to do more to encourage local tourism, as well as regional, because I see in statistics, Chair, there isn't much about Africa here. You know, you see about UK, we are told that the primary visitors are from UK, Europe, etc. Now with the global recession, we can't rely entirely on them. And then there are issues about political stability, all of these issues that actually impact on whether people come or don't come, because these are some of the factors. So if they see firstly, they say the financial exchange rate, if it's good, that would be encouraging. But then they will say, okay, what is the political situation in the prime sites that we want to visit? And if they're not encouraging, then obviously they're not going to come. Then we'll be deprived of FDI at the same time, and it will not help sustain the little job that we created during the World Cup. So yes, that's just the other observation I made. And another observation I make is, how come countries like Mauritius and other countries, little countries like Botswana, Lesotho, and all these other countries, sometimes do so well when it comes to tourism? And we, with all our potential, we are not realizing our potential, really. So maybe, as a committee, we need to emphasize this in the House and to the Department of Tourism that, hey, you know, there's great potential, like the niche markets that the gentleman spoke about, what he was doing in for language. And Chair, you pointed out the issue of marriage. Then medical, you know, like India now. You can go to a hospital. You can book your package from here. You want to go for an operation, whether it's to enlarge your breast implant or whatever, they book you into a hotel, secure, transport provided, holiday tour provided, recuperation period also provided for in the hotel at a special rate, doctor is already there, they're waiting for you when you land, they got everything set for you. Now, why can't we do that in Africa? If people are willing to come across the borders, or travel from far off to come and do shopping and go back and sell their stuff, then there's something we have. We've got something to give, isn't it? So I think there are other niche markets as well that you spoke about, getting married on the table mountain. So it's a case of branding. I don't think we are doing well, and I don't think our diplomatic corps. I mean, India has a trade desk and a tourism desk at every embassy, and they vigorously market themselves. They are vigorously supporting the industry, you know. I don't think that our embassies and high commissions are doing. We need to find out from the Department of Foreign Affairs. Show us what you are doing to promote tourism in our country. Do you have a dedicated desk to do that, to liaise with the local industry there and try to link them up with our industry here? What are they doing? Our government must do this. We must make it possible for our local industry to actually compete. With that, I'll just stop right there. Thank you.
Okay. No. Together we can do it better.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine are more comments, but I think it's relevant to what we need to try and sort out at this committee, because I believe we've got to find a solution, Chair, to some of the problems that we've put here as challenges.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things which we're not really touched on, and I think is the opportunity which we are losing out, is the whole cruiser liner industry and the fact that, you know, our ports are not responding to the demand of that. For instance, you know, when the Queen Mary came here, 2,000 passengers on board there, and they had to offload them in the, you know, in a dock area which was not conducive to that type of thing. And I can remember as a young student here when the Union Castle Lines used to come into here, there was proper facilities where you know passengers could get off and on board under covered positions.
Good cultural welcome.
And Home Affairs and that. I mean, so my feeling is that we are cross-cutting in every sense. I mean, you know, what you were talking about there with Sandparks, with Department of Transport, Department of Home Affairs and these.
You come to the table.
You know, it just goes on and on because tourism impacts across a very wide range. And I would propose that, you know, I don't know whether I don't know this committee very well in terms of its interactions, but I would believe the time has come for us to have some sort of an indaba with these people and say, look, these are the things that are coming on our table. What are you doing about it to try and improve it? And, you know, with being in transport, for instance, for nearly 13 years, I was party to the bill that eventually came an act called the National Land Transport Act, which actually separates the issue which was raised here between public transport mini taxis, for instance, and their operating license permits and tourism. That was 7 years ago. And in that particular act here, we actually emphasized the fact that this matter had to be dealt with in terms of a regulation which would enable them to become more sufficient in terms of their needs. Because the tourist operator will get a client here in Cape Town landing, and that client wants to go there. Now, it means having to cross over various provinces. Do you think it can actually, you can organize that operating license permits to cross over provinces? They appointed a national land transport regulator a week ago in Johannesburg. And effectively, the act said that you should bring those things down to Western Cape and to Durban and to Joburg, so that you can actually deal very quickly with your client's needs in terms of where they want to go and how that tourist operator can get them from here to there to there. The bureaucratic chain with that would chase any tourist away, because he's not going to sit around for 3 days of his stay here waiting for an operator to get a license. So I think we need to get the Department of Land of Transport to deal with this matter very quickly. It's now reached a critical point in the sense that this operator has now been done, and it was actually very clearly defined as something which had to take place. And I know there's been interaction with tourism and transport, and it's not happened, Mr. Chair, and it's very, very urgent. So that permit thing needs to be done. Now, also being in transport, I'm aware of the problems with ACSA. Now, that needs another interaction with the department, because we need to call that portfolio to task, because in the Act, ACSA's bottom line is recovered from tariffs. It happens to say that. So anything, now you take King Shaka, they had to spend billions of rands there because of the World Cup, not by their wish or doing or their board's decision. The money was spent, and now they've got 200 million of a deficit on their bottom line. So they have to, in terms of the Act, recover that from the landing fees. And the landing fees now, 80,000 rand for a tent. The guys are saying, let's go somewhere else to land and bust the people in. No, literally. So we're actually cutting our own, you know, just bite our face. So we need to have a look at ACSA's story as well. And that just needs an amendment in the Act, one amendment. And then finally, I think the Sandparks Robben Island story. I mean, again, you know, we're chasing people away. It's become, you know, out of reach for a lot of people. And if we can't provide the service there of excellence to people coming here, then I think we're going to also need to have to talk to those two particular agencies. Thank you.
Yeah. You see, I think as we are going on, we've got to use facilities that are at our disposal, like questions, statements, and motions. But what is tough is the paradigm shift in our political parties. People think that tourism is just for visitors, just for pleasure, leisure, economic development, providing infrastructure and so forth, are more of priorities than these things. So it means we ourselves as members of the Tourism Distinct Committee have also to play a role of advocacy within the parties themselves. And then secondly, make statements highlighting the issues, the importance of matters sometimes. Because it takes a long time before people are educated and come to a position that this should be done. There's a problem in Cape Town, these sun parks and so forth. People are thinking they are doing good. They are fighting consumption of alcoholism and so forth. So these things, it's a competition. So tourism itself as well, in terms of advocacy, has got to get into the competition and try hard to fight its way. Mr. Khorai.
Thanks, Chairperson, and also thanks for the presentation. I heard the presenter say that the tourism creates more jobs, mainly on the semi-skilled and unskilled people. I just wanted to get, are these jobs permanent from the skilled and semi-skilled and unskilled people? Are they permanent or are they temporary jobs that they have been created by this tourism? Secondly, Chair, the issue of the officials of government officials that are using the five-star hotels, I'm sure at some stage we do, as this committee, raise the matter and the commitment from department that I use, also the B&Bs, the imaging people. And I'm not sure whether it still exists even today, because that was a commitment from their side on this issue. Lastly, Chair, my real concern is this one of the liquor bill and the crime. I'm sure this bill, in Cape Town, also in Free State, it has been applied, because now I'm studied in a liquor bill vis-a-vis crime, because since from this liquor bill has been implemented, if you hear the statistics of crime in South Africa, they have just declined. And maybe have another vision on that, but that is not my impression that I've got after having this particular liquor bill. Maybe the presenter should give us more details on this issue. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah, now it's competing needs. Mamu Jawe.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm looking at the time and our agenda. I want to suggest that we postpone the report and continue with this discussion, because I found the presentation myself very interesting and also very useful. I'm not saying answer me. I'm just putting something for food for thought here. Because we feel intimidated when we have to ask our questions and make comments rushing for time. And the visitors will go. They may not come back maybe for another year, but we can still come together and deal with the report. Even tomorrow.
Thank you.
I'm
taking
my own time.
Okay. And then we'll see how to manage.
Yeah, firstly, I must say I find the very format of presentation very interesting. Well, for instance, the presenters, you know, they are actually handing over to one another, you know, as the presentation goes on. I like that. It keeps us awake. But mine are mainly going to be comments more than questions. I want to comment, for instance, on your very first slide, where you were talking about access to funds and also talking about partnerships with other associations. And among these, we also included, for instance, partnerships with some entities of government, like Kula and so on and so forth. But I want to say you make it sound so easy, as if it is easy, you know, for the SMMEs, for instance, to access this fund. It is difficult. That is what we have experienced, and that is what we have heard from the very stakeholders themselves. So maybe if you can also try and help us there, it might help. We have come into contact with a number of people who are trying to get into the industry, and they are finding it very, very difficult to access the facilities that you are mentioning. Say nothing about cooler. Anyway, I think cooler is now no longer cooler. It's going to be combined with something else. But still, it's not easy. Even the funds that are available in the DTI, for example, I mean, it is very, very difficult. Yeah. The ordinary people down there are not able to access this fund. One of the constraints. You mentioned the question of, for instance, you gave an example of the training of drivers, where there weren't enough opportunities, for instance, for them afterwards to be able to continue, you know, with the job. We're all fishing from the same pond, you said. Now, we've just come from Mexico, and we learned there, you know, an approach that, to me, I'm just wondering if South Africa is not really emulated. Where, for instance, before you can start saying you have produced a product, all the stakeholders for that particular product that is going to be produced with regard to tourism, they participate. And they end up saying, yes, we need this product. It is only when they say we need this product, then that the product is produced. I know I'm not making myself maybe very clear, but that is, you know, what happens. You see, with us, we seem to start this now and start that now and start that, and in the end, we find that none of them is working. Mm. That's what I'm trying to say. So on jobs, I'm finding a different approach here, where you are giving us millions and millions of jobs that are created in terms of tourism. We tend to think of only of the jobs that are created, say, by the department. That is what we tend to think of. Or by, you know, directly by the industry itself. That amounts to the 225,000 jobs, for instance, which the department is hoping to create in the next 10 years or so. But we are speaking of millions of jobs. You are talking about all those who contribute directly and indirectly towards a tourism. Fine. See that beautiful scarf, for example. If I was a tourist and I came across a shop, you know, which was selling that scarf, I would definitely buy it, you see. So I find that approach quite interesting as well. I never thought of it that way. But it makes me think, you know, that maybe we need to be more serious about what is South African. It comes to mind, there may be other things, but just now what comes to mind is, for instance, again in the manufacturing industry. There were these factories which were producing, shall I say, the typical South African material, although it's a German thing originally, but it has become ours. It's a shweshwe, you see. Yeah, that is the sort of material. But what is happening is that the very factories that you're producing it are closing down. And yet this is typical South African. And people are complaining out there. They did in Mexico. That they come to South Africa, they buy something, only to find that it is made in China. Not made in South Africa. Yeah. So I'm then saying I like this approach, but I think we need to ensure, you know, that it actually happens. You know, it's not just in figures, but it actually happens. At present, the situation is not that wonderful. As I say, for me, in my area, there was this factory that was producing the special material, beautiful material, but it has closed down. It has now closed down. So when the people get there, what they are going to buy is a Ghanaian material, or a material from the Republic of the Congo. That's where I got this one from. The question of you know, the visas, things like landing costs. I think we have in this community actually identified the need, Mr. Faro, to meet other departments that are contributing towards tourism. And I think transport is one of them. We have agreed that we need to meet the Department of Transport. We have agreed that we need to meet home affairs, for instance, with regard to the visas. So I think those have been identified. We agree with you. But I think what is needed is that you must just try and push ahead for that to happen. And pricing South Africa out of the market, that's another area that is also of real concern. You know, when you hear that people are putting up in Joburg or in Durban or in Cape Town in hotels, 5,000 per night, 20,000 per night, you just wonder really what we are trying to do. And pricing ourselves out of the market, it also reminds me of what we have been hearing lately. We also did this in the print media, that actually South Africa is losing its position as a gateway, you know, into Africa. They say we are losing that, Chairperson. Nigeria and Egypt are overtaking us. So I think we really have to be very careful. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Bring.
Oh, yes, Chairperson, I wanted to talk about crime. For me, it seems as if the municipalities sometimes are the ones that do us down. You see, because I think supervising and actually ensuring that the tourists are protected is done at local level. It's got to happen at local level. And so the municipalities have got to develop those municipalities that have specific tourist attractions, really. Something has to be done by them to ensure that the tourists in those particular areas are actually protected. I don't see how, for instance, the National Department of the Police can go and protect tourists in East London on the beach there. And meanwhile, lately in East London, I'm sure you must have read it, there's a number of attacks that have been committed on tourists. Just last week alone, about four or so in 1 week. I think you all must have read about another case that happened a few weeks earlier, where two Swedish women were actually raped, you know, on our shorelines. I mean, that is very, very bad indeed. But I'm trying to say, if the BCM, that is the Buffalo City Municipality in East London, is unable to protect the tourists there, we will continue having these problems all the time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Bengu.
I'll be very brief, Chair, and to thank the presenters, and I'll concur with the member. I think we would need a broader meeting as a committee to look deeper into what we're talking about. This is not just about children. It's a nation building. I'm saying this because if we're to reflect back to where we started in 1994, then we then take tourism and put it into the picture. Is it all about people coming to enjoy themselves? We have not completed our task. Because the very same tourism that we're talking about, the question of perceptions that you spoke about, there are still minds that are still holding back in the past. I'm not going to talk about the Virgin Active incident. I'm not going to talk about the incident that we saw in the papers over the weekend where people are being trained to perpetuate the issue of racism in the country. Because as you spoke about these things, that they're giving our country a bad name again, to then say, have we reconciled? Our committee is meant to drive that political agenda. Now, I'm saying this because we've become our own nemesis, as it were. And it demands of us, because I can also hear Mamunjobe raising the issue of crime. Our committee, we have to have this kind of a meeting where we're going to subpoena and meet with all the various departments that have been mentioned, and then begin to discuss the challenges that we're confronted with. Because yes, we might as well talk nicely about South Africa as where it is today. Why the issue of Robben Island? I mean, this is where it all started, if I may say so. Mm-hmm. Now, there's the very same call
point where we should start is non-functional, if I may put it that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do come to our country, they talk about that. Now, if I may get off your lighter note, Mapungubwe, we have to begin to talk about that because that is our history. There is this military structure around the corner, the castle. At one point, I recall that there was this idea of selling it. But go and talk to it, and then you find a pure South African history. But we never spoke about it. And if we then begin to talk about it, yes, if you talk tourism around Cape Town, Robben Island, and the Table Mountain, not about the castle. It has a history. Who is suppressing that history? Because when we visited that castle, we discovered that it has a limited history of a given group of people. Are we living in isolation? Now, go further. And I just want to make it, that is why I'm proposing that we have to talk about this thing. If you go to various bungalows along the coast, they've become an exclusive destination for specific people. I made a call one time, and I was told that it was full. And I used another voice. They then said, you can come. I hope you hear what I'm saying. In one, I had to get cash to get in there because a given person at the gate, a security person, simply says, did you book? I said, no, no, no. It's not about me coming to book. I just want to see that there's a setting inside here. They literally refused. Ultimately, I was inside, only to find that it's a secluded spot in a rural area next to the sea. When I went in there, a different color, and not a single black person was there. All the vehicles were GP, NW, KZN, and all that. Then I started to do a head count and the attitude. Why are we doing those things? That's a big question. Why are we beginning to isolate ourselves? We're trying to create one rainbow nation. But once again, we're beginning now to have our pockets, as much as I've reflected to the issue of the training that was in the media, to then say, where are we taking our country to? What is tourism, Jefferson? That is why now we have to give it even a further political clout to then say, why this committee? Because this particular committee and tourism is meant to embrace not just South Africans, even all peoples of the country, of the world, as it were, to then say, we are one. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think this discussion is very interesting, but unfortunately, we've got to be disciplined with time. But what we shall do is we thought of planning this thing. Not a summit. We had a summit last year, and we'll be having one next year. But something where we meet, we meet different role players. They're just their heads and interact under one roof. We have been discussing this with the chairperson of chairpersons. It's not yet approved, but we think it is going to go through. But having said that, I think we've got a massive job of public relations in the country, promoting the country, and we are not promoting the country. The Mexicans, for instance, they've got this slogan, correct me if I'm wrong, Mexico, the country you thought you knew. You see, they are trying to say that we are perceived as a drug state, we are perceived as a gang type of people, but by people that think they knew us. They have a campaign where they have intelligence, as you talked about intelligence, where they interview people who had been in the country on their way out and ask them about Mexico, why they are not aware with the hidden camera. And then they use those messages to advertise their destination. They targeted the U.S. market because of they believe in celebrities. When they are celebrities, they take their photos, and then they make the celebrities their advocates in the country. And they say, also lastly now, I don't want to talk too much as a person. They have 300 interviews with press per month or per annum. But the philosophy behind it is that if you as a country do not speak positively about yourself, that void will be occupied by negative news from someone else. I think South Africans, we've got to be aware of that. And spend more on driving perceptions, because we believe in brick and mortar, it helps, but there is this soft area, what is it called? Soft issues in management. I think there is a gap that everyone else has to play. But they collect money from tourism, from government at the three layers, and then from other the operators as well, the taxi operators, and then together they fund promoting their country. I think it's a matter of time. We've got to find a solution as South Africans as well, but together we cannot afford to fight amongst the ourselves. The Chinese are not fighting amongst themselves. The Mexicans are not fighting amongst themselves. The people in the USA are not fighting amongst themselves. Angolans are not fighting amongst themselves. Nigerians are not fighting amongst themselves. We've got to resolve these things of fighting amongst ourselves, one way or the other. And then the solution is within us. And that solution is about continuing having discussions as a nation. Talk ourselves into one. These are the issues which need to be identified and work. And then whenever we work towards them. Develop a common purpose and work towards that common purpose. Maybe difficult, but it's not impossible. Can only make our country better. The Chinese, in their five-year plan, they say that they are going to have 80 million tourists moving out of China in their 80. And then they say if South Africa gets 1%, it means it is going to have 800,000 tourists from China. And in Mexico, they told us that each Chinese person spends about $1,200 per day against the U.S. and English that spend about $125 a day. I think my memory is serving me well there. So these are the things, these are the stakes. So it is up to us. But just briefly then respond to these things, because in most of them we do not have to respond. But duties of parliamentarians is to ask questions to departments, make statements, move motions, and within their parties, they are leaders. They've got to develop this paradigm shift. It's slow, and then you know in your party, and we know in our party, there are competing needs. There is competition. It's not only tourism. So you've got to fight your way all the time. So we are fighting all the way, but it's not easy. And it happens perhaps even in Cape Town. It's not easy for people in tourism. There's competition for other things as well. People want toilets, they want this and that.
say now, you want to visit. They think that you are the visitor. You are looking at the economy of the country, but they don't perceive it as the economy of the country. It's these things, challenges that we've got to try and handle. But they need us to be together. All stakeholders in tourism have to talk one language. And then after talking one language, they'll have to make every South African talk one language. It's a challenge, yes, but we can go there. We are South Africans. We managed in 1994. We are going to win. But let us make it a little faster. But respond, then we can see where it puts us. Mr. Van Sieren and Mr. Johnson. Over to you, just shortly, believe you me, we are going to try and do something about the feeling that we've got to make.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in terms of all the comments, I can't say anything but I agree. In terms of the comments that have been raised, things like statistics, how old they are, the frustration for us in the industry as well, the various things in terms of how integrated it is in order to speak with other departments. I think when we look at certain legislation, it's done for a certain purpose within a certain industry. And tourism is caught in the crossfire, if you will, of that. And there's unintended results from those acts that has an implication on tourism. So even though from the tourism side we do acknowledge that there is legitimate reasons for certain legislation, we do ask that tourism's needs and requirements be taken into account in that in particular. Just in terms of particular questions that was raised in terms of the job creation, in terms of whether it's permanent or temporary, it's a combination of both. The majority of the jobs are permanent, but because of the seasonal nature of tourism, there are many seasonal jobs. So we do find that there are a lot of temporary staff within the tourism industry that do move around. Yes, unfortunately, they are seem to be your unskilled employee who are then temporary employed. In terms of the liquor bill, this will lead to a reduction in crime. We do not have any statistics, but I think here again, we coming back to the comment, in terms of the unintended consequences, like Howard mentioned, is in terms of suddenly now you've got an establishment who might like to serve a champagne breakfast who might not be able to. That was not the establishment that was targeted in when the bill was raised. So there's these unintended consequences. We do agree and so that the bill, there was legitimate reasons for it and that it had targeted crime in terms of that. And I'm sure that in terms of the enforcement of the bill, there has been a reduction in crime in terms of that intention that it had in order to do that. All we're saying is that could we then just make sure that tourism is not caught in a crossfire, if you will. For me, in terms of the indirect job creation, all of that, the more local manufacturers, I couldn't agree with you more. Mm-hmm. I think particularly when we talk about SMMEs, about the larger, more established companies using the local companies within that area. We're looking at food production, for example. Why not use your local food producer? Get fresh produce from the guy that's next to you. Why do you need to truck it in from Johannesburg when you're in a rural Eastern Cape? Have an agreement or a cooperation agreement, a partnership with your local producers, and they're producing far more better, bigger, fresher produce than you can get from a refrigerated truck that's being moved in. And many of the times, it's actually more cost effective. It's a little bit of the initial investment in terms of that, and that's sometimes what frightens the tourism operators, because they see this initial investment in terms of going to the effort to actually go to that partnership, but in the long term, you're going to be saving money. So just in terms of that, I then hand over as we do, keeping everybody away.
Yeah, people have got to go to other meetings.
Okay. I just want to say a big thank you to everybody here for allowing us to come and have a chat to you. And also, you can please call upon us. We've got our cards. Please feel free if you need any more information from us, we will gladly assist where we can.
Yeah, what is going to happen is that and what we have been emphasizing, every one of us here, is that dialogue in tourism is very important.
and we've got to speed it up. I think this message is very, very clear. And responsible leaders, I think, let us make sure that that happens. The issue or the other issues, please ask them in your questions for your political party. I mean, there are so many questions that I'm raising that we can ask from ministers, different ministers, and then as we continue, we shall develop a report, we shall table that report in parliament. That report will have recommendations will be parliament recommendations going then to the department, but not only the Department of Tourism. We shall try and make sure that it also goes to other departments that are affected. But thank you very much, Mr. Pantirian and Mr. Johnson. You realize that how important your input has been. This is your country. You've got to ask yourself, what is my contribution in my country? And we believe that you've got a great contribution in our country, and you can even do better. So having said that, we can release you now and then manage the rest of the meeting. Thank you very much. And then on the on item B of the agenda, and then item C of the agenda, let us take them as tables, and then for consideration next week. But please make your input. We have not had your input on the other report, and then on the diagnostic.
Thank you, Chair. As far as the report that just are concerned, unfortunately we were not on the tour, so we just came in now, so there are some parts of that which we will not be able to cover. However, I want to assure you, Chair, of my
Chair, I want to assure you, though I'm new, my senior colleague is also new to the portfolio. We want to assure you of our cooperation. That we will do what's in the interest of our country. That's how we operate, and that's how it will be. I have a suggestion to make, Chair, which is we have a session, as my colleague and I were discussing. We need to have a strategic plan for the committee and how we're going to address these challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So we speak with one voice, inside the House, inside the party, as well as outside. So we need a brainstorming session in which we should collectively try to come up with a strategic plan. How are we going to address these issues? My colleague kept showing me this, and I agree fully with him that this issue has to be dealt with all the chairs of the other committees to get them on board to support whatever we are saying. And we at some stage are going to have to meet with the various departments to address the challenges that they spoke about. So we need to come up with a strategic plan how to do that, Chair.
As a concluding remark, let us all build a stronger and better South Africa. It can only be for our children and children of Africa. Thank you.
I was just going to suggest that next meeting, if you could start with these reports and the minutes before we have the presentation. I don't know what our program is next week, but if you could start with the report. Because we have some comments on the report.
Yeah, in fact, continue making comments on the report. They are still welcome. The input, for instance, in the report, the secretary's report, we are still awaiting that we are going to add another report that is coming from the researcher.
Yeah.
And then combine it, and then your input as well. So write your input. And so that we can have them in the report.
Okay,
I've made written input as well.
I just received the researcher's report now this morning. Because I was going to say, can't we have the two combined? But I've got some other.
But I need your input as well. Your input as well. You see, I have put my input, and it's not integrated as well.
So let us. You know, the thing is that there are a lot of lessons that